Welcome to Not Terrible.
I'm Jess Hooker.
And I'm Mary Graham. This is episode 31 of the Not Terrible podcast. On this week's episode, we're continuing our discussion on minimalism and consumerism. We're talking about the books and people who are reshaping the way we look at our possessions. Not Terrible, a field guide for the hopeless optimist.
So as always, we show up at the table with a handful of books each, and sometimes they apply to the topic and sometimes they don't. And last episode, I brought one of them, and it's called $2 a Day, Living on Almost Nothing in America. But I brought it because I didn't know, I assumed that the authors had just tried to live on $2 a day just to see if they could. Well, it turns out that it is a shocking book about poverty in America right now. And between both authors and surveys that they conducted, nearly 1.5 million households, including 3 million children, live on $2 a day per person. And they're just begging the question, how is this number continuing to grow? Where do these families live? What happened? How do they recover? So for being the wealthiest, most powerful nation in the world, we have people that are unable to feed themselves or their children. People that have to sell plasma as often as possible and give to a donation center just to have cash income.
I think in learning about socioeconomics as a teacher in a lower income school district, and then just like the social justice bend that my heart kind of does naturally. When we say we're one of the wealthiest nations in the world, we are also one of the most off balance with our wealth. We have a large section of the population that is very wealthy, and we have a large section of the population that is very, very poor. It's not equal distribution at all. So we might have a wealthy government. We might have a lot of wealthy people running our government. But I think the majority of America and the families that make up America are not wealthy. Maybe wealthy compared to the rest of the world, but they're still living paycheck to paycheck. They're still living, you know, hand to mouth. The idea that they don't have retirement set up, or they're one medical emergency away from bankruptcy. Like, there are many, many things that kind of classify you as truly wealthy, and I think that's less than we project, because we're Americans and we're all like pull ourselves up by our bootstraps, and so we all have that privileged mentality even when a lot of us don't actually fit that category. So why we're talking about this today is last episode we talked about just consumerism and how we're trying to live a little bit differently. Neither one of us are claiming to be...
I want to say we.
Okay.
No. You're being very specific and mindful about your effort this year and what exactly you're doing. Do you want to tell the people again what your plan is?
The end of last year, I read a book that kind of shifted my thinking about the things that we bring into our home and the way that we spend our money. So 2019 is just being a little more focused on less stuff and wiser financial choices. And this has been a process for years of slowly like working this out. The point we're at right now, we're just trying to figure out how we can live with less and still have a good life. And I know that sounds like a very like privileged way of saying that, but we had too much. We're trying to figure out what is a good way of life for us without needing so many things.
I have a really interesting perspective because I lived with my mom in a mobile home community and in multiple apartments until I was about 10, 11 years old. And then I moved to the suburbs in a beautiful home that I still live in today, actually, with my own family, and never wanted for anything. And, you know, just early on in my childhood, I never wanted for anything anywhere, but there were times you'd be in the grocery store and, no, we can't afford that, or you have to put that back, or just being told no. And then going to live with my dad and never really being told no. I mean, unless it was just something idiotic, which, trust me, I could dream up some idiotic things that I wanted. I wanted a screen door on my bedroom door one time so it would feel more like an apartment because I was a teenager and I was angry and I wanted to live alone. But, yeah, he did say no to that.
Rightly so. That's super weird.
So, but I had two different perspectives. And going to an inner city school and then going to, you know, this little
suburb/
farm community. And, wow. And even the way who my friends were and where my friends lived and what they did for a living, and, I mean, everything. It was a 180, but I'm grateful. I mean, there was one point where my mother was married to a correctional officer, and we lived on the campus of the boys' school. It was a part of it. It was, you had the option to live there for considerably less to live on campus. Everything changed. Everything was so, so different. And I'm grateful that I did have that experience.
So my experience then is the opposite. So I was, while money was sometimes tight or we didn't get everything we wanted, we also never had to move. Like, we always had our nice big house. We always had new clothes when we needed them. Mm-hmm. My parents sacrificed a lot to give up. So we never wanted for anything. Mm-hmm. But then when I became a teacher and taught around kids and families and people that didn't grow up like me, it was almost a culture shock of, oh, some people don't celebrate Christmas in December. They celebrate Christmas when they get their tax refund in March. That's when they have money for Christmas. So I had lots of kids that didn't really do anything at the holidays until that tax refund check came, and then that was their Christmas in the spring. So, or in the late winter. That was a common thing for some kids. So I learned that at a late age that people lived differently than me. So in processing through like too much stuff at our house, how do I show my kids and make them sensitive and more aware of the privilege and the power that they have just because they don't need for much? And how do I raise kids that are grateful and thankful and generous and not just obsessed with more and more things, because everywhere they turn, they're being told that they need more things. So that's not where I started that whole get rid of all the stuff process, but that's where I'm at right now. Like, what's the next step? If you realize you have too much and you're purging and you want to live with less, the goal isn't just to live with less. I think it's to be able to have more resources to do more things with, and not just for ourselves.
Mm-hmm. You mentioned in the book that you had read, which is called
The Year of Less.
The Year of Less. She was mindful with her money. Yes, she didn't spend money on certain things, but she did spend money on travel. So it made her realize, oh my gosh, I want to be intentional with the money I'm spending, and I want to put it towards something that I love and that I want to do. And I think that that's a place to start.
Mm-hmm.
What is something like, it wasn't just with her money, it was with her time. It was with her time that she wanted to travel and see things, and that's how she wanted to spend her time. And I think that when we begin to purge and maybe we have a little bit of guilt, and when you look around the house and go, oh my gosh, we have spent so much money on nothing, mm-hmm. on nothing. And then in those moments, okay, I know that the last big purge that I did, I found a place that it outfits apartments for women leaving abusive relationships. You have to make an appointment and you drive in and they check you and the whole thing. And I realized this is where all this stuff is supposed to be. And this is where its new home is. And then realizing I should really spend a little bit more time here. My time, not scrolling Amazon and looking for things to buy, but instead donating my time and helping in any way I can people in these situations.
In one of the books I read, I can't even remember which one because I've read lots of them. it was, they made the point about like, the goal is not to just purge and then consume and then purge and then consume. Right. Like it is. And I, when I started purging, it felt good. But I think especially in the beginning of that a few years ago, I wasn't actively trying to not replace everything I was getting rid of. Like I was almost in the cycle of, I can get rid of things and now I have more space to get things I love as opposed to things I just kind of liked. Mm-hmm. So the next step becomes, why did I need these things to begin with? And I don't have to fill those spaces. Like we right now are living with, we have two closets in our house that have nothing in them. They're
that sounds so sad.
Because we don't have anything.
That's good.
Like we don't have, we went from a house 2 years ago that was around 1,000 square feet, and now we have double that size, and we didn't really buy, like we didn't even need more furniture. We didn't, we just spread out. We didn't feel like we got any more space. I don't know. That's a weird, mm-hmm. in our old house, we had a basement that was just tons of storage. So what I did is I had the storage, so I kept things. I kept lots of things I didn't need. And so now, 2 years into our current house, I am aware that I keep a lot of things that we have no need for. In The Cozy Minimalist, she makes the point that like some people don't want to get rid of things because it's a waste of money. Like I bought that, I can't just get rid of it. And she's like, well, you wasted the money when you bought it to begin with, not now that you're getting rid of it. The money was wasted the moment you bought something you didn't need.
Right.
If we could change our mindset and say, I'm going to stop wasting money by buying the things, not then keeping things I don't need and feeling like I have to store them. That would change what I buy.
It makes too much sense that I don't want to talk about this anymore. I don't want to talk about it.
How often do you have to tell your kids like, hey, you have two winter coats and there are some that don't have any before they just completely tune you out as opposed to like, are thankful for those two winter coats that they have? Because that's what I'm doing right now.
It's funny. In terms of things needed, Max is a minimalist, I would say. He is like a 5 to 10 piece of clothing kind of guy. And then he has these weird perks. Like he has a winter coat. He loves it, wears it, or he doesn't wear a winter coat. There's no extra winter coats,
mm-hmm.
which that's cool, good. But then he collects things. And there's like but then he thinks he needs all of them. So we need every pair of socks that are funny. And we need every record ever in the history of the world. But outside of that, he is very much a minimalist. He has two things that he likes to collect, and it's socks and records.
Mm-hmm.
Addie. We always say that Addie has, like some people have an issue with depth perception. Addie has an issue with portion perception, and that's not in like she could have a plate full of ketchup, take a bite of ketchup, and go, I need more ketchup. She does that with clothes too. If we give something away to someone, well, then we need to go find it in her size now and replace it. She needs it. We have mm-hmm. to have it. So whenever we need a winter coat for when we wear a dress, and we need a winter coat for when we wear jogging pants, and we need a winter coat for when we wear blue jeans, and we need to, I don't know where she got that or where she would have learned that style. I'm not going to take any responsibility for this. I'm going to duck behind.
Awkward eye contact.
I know. Sorry. So, yeah, Addie's very different that way. But Addie, we can't clean out her stuff if she's home. We have to do it while she's gone, which mm-hmm. I think that's a common thing for a lot of moms.
Yeah.
But she would absolutely lose her mind if she knew that we gave away anything that was hers. Whether the other people needed it or not, or whether she couldn't even fit her pinky toe in it, it's hers and she wants it and mm-hmm. she does not want anybody else to have it. But that also kind of goes along with her, like, mentally she's childlike that way, and it's hard to explain when somebody needs something more than she does.
Right, because her current mentality age is it. In general, that's a very selfish age.
It is a selfish age. Yes. Yes.
Which, not as an Addie thing, but as a developmental thing.
Right. So it makes it a lot of fun right now when mentally she's, you know, 5 and physically she's 13 and everything about her is just great, big, selfish, 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 selfish.
Yeah.
So we're having a great time at our house.
Cool.
Yeah.
Remind me not to come over.
Trust me, you'll feel the tension before you even turn on our street. You'll know.
She was here a couple weeks ago on the couch, and she can see through my bookshelves to my... I could feel her staring at me. You had made her mad, and you went out to the car to get your phone or something, and I know she was just, like, actively mad at everyone in this room, and I was like, oh, I can do mad with you, Addie. Don't... I'll bring it. Which just makes me laugh, because, like, I remember being an angry kid, and, yeah. like... It would have made me so much madder to know that one of my parents' friends thought it was entertaining.
Which you did.
I did.
I was like, she's making me nuts. And you were like, I know, this is great. But they don't, let's see. Addie's also the one that if I give someone money on the street, she will tell the first person we see afterwards. You know how you're not supposed to give money to people on the street? My mom did. At the stoplight, my mom gave money to people. She did, and I'm just like, Addison, stop. Yeah. She was like, you're not supposed to do that. I'm going to tell on you. Well, thank you. Thank you for that, Addie.
There is, and I am, I often have this mindset, if I don't think my way out of it, is this mentality of like hoarding. Because at some point I might not have enough of something. Mm-hmm. And I'm trying to actively live with hands open more to realize that I can look back at 37 years of life and know that I was never really, and I've never starved. I've never not had a place to stay. Maybe sometimes I didn't get the shoes I wanted because they cost more than I had, but I have never... Like, I've never gone without. So if I stop trying to consume so much and live kind of what we said in the last episode with the idea that I have enough, I think it changes the way we behave with our money. Mm-hmm. And I know, in general, kids pay attention to how we act as opposed to our words. So if they see me... not buying everything I want at the store, if they see me sharing our resources, I don't have to tell them what I'm doing. They see it.
Mm-hmm. Max and I go to thrift stores. Like, that's kind of our thing that we enjoy doing. And we thrift stored 2 places in one night, which is like, that was just a bad idea. Mm. We walked into the second place, and I don't even know if we were down the first aisle, and Max was like, he turns around and looks at me, and I put 2 things in the cart already, and he goes, you do not have to fill the cart. And I was like, yes, I do.
What are we doing here?
Yeah, what's the point? What is even the point, Max? And I was like, oh, my gosh. And now I have started going into the store, and you don't have to fill the cart. Like, mm-hmm. And not literally, but... How little do you need?
Yeah.
Do you actually need this right this moment? And Max just has a way of, he is a voice of reason for me in times, like, just in the most random times. I mean, he'll say something and I'm just like, damn.
Yeah.
I'm supposed to be the parent here. And but so yeah, now I walk into stores and you don't have to fill the cart. But I had felt that way, like, oh, we can afford this. We're getting all of it.
I have the money. Why shouldn't I buy this?
Yeah.
I have done that more in the past couple months too. Like, I remember one afternoon I was just we needed bread or something random, and I was like, I'll go get that at the Target that has the grocery store. That's convenient. And filled up my basket with things, and then had enough time then to walk around and talk myself through what I was doing, mm-hmm. and just randomly kept dropping things off. Like, you know, the person that, like, puts stuff, like, these are shoes. I'm going to put them next to the frozen foods.
Anytime you see a random, like, just pile of things,
yes.
I've cleaned out my car.
Yeah, like, I had a little come of Jesus with myself in the Target aisle, and I just sprinkled all the things back through the store and went to the register with a loaf of bread, which is all I needed. Like, and a year ago, I wouldn't have done that. So I know that we're getting somewhere, but I still, if I don't give myself the space to think about it, will fall back into the habit of just buying things because I have $50 in my pocket that I don't have to do anything with, or like I have an hour and I could go wander around Marshall's and just pick things up.
Mm-hmm. Oh yeah. Marshall's is, that's a death wish for me. That's bad news.
Yeah.
I found another book, and it's in the Remodelista series. She has two books. The latest one is The Organized Home, and the other one is A Manual to the Considered Home. So it's like mindful living, mindful-based living, and, mm-hmm. and even in your decorating and the way that you organize things. She uses a Quaker or a Shaker type. Not Shaker. I think it's Quaker. Quaker type lifestyle, where it's like everything is visible, and if it's not visible, then it's in a basket that's easily accessible. Like, they use a lot of hooks and pegs, like just in the wall for
so
everything.
Everything has a purpose, or it's not.
It's basically
necessary.
Not. It's not necessary. But she talks about the order of living. And I'll read a couple. Buying fewer and better things, which Mary and I have discussed a lot lately in terms of getting older and not just going to Forever 21 because, A, we're 37, and B, it's poor quality. It's going to last you a season, and then you're going to throw it out. Mm-hmm. I mean, the one thing that we do agree that you do that with is your tights and your pantyhose.
Mm-hmm.
They get a season, and then you throw them away, and you get new.
Because they get crusty.
And then you don't realize that you need new until it's the first time that you need tights or pantyhose.
Mm-hmm.
You learn the hard way.
Too soon.
Sorry, Mary. Not trying to air out your business there. Donate the stuff you don't use. We just talked about that a little bit in me sharing my story.
Sorry, can I go back to the less things but better quality? I think, and so I've been thinking about this a lot. There's a lot of Instagram people I follow that kind of preach that message of mm-hmm. better things, or being aware of where your clothes come from. So a lot of the Forever 21 struggle for many people is that why their clothes are so cheap is because they employ, you know, children in sweatshops around mm-hmm. the world to produce cheap clothes for us. I understand that, like, responsibility that we have. If we have the money, we should be buying more responsibly made clothes. Mm-hmm. But on the flip side of that is that the idea that we can even talk about that is inherently privileged, so that we can say we have the ability to buy clothes that are more costly. Just like drips of money in a way that
makes you feel gross.
Yeah, because when I was in an inner city school downtown, those kids, to feel included and accepted and cool or popular or whatever clothes make you feel in high school, the only place they were ever going to be able to do that was Forever 21 or the local shop on the corner. And to tell them you shouldn't be doing that.
Right.
like the privilege that comes with saying I can buy well-made clothes mm-hmm. in and of itself feels a little off. You know, like we have talked about that. Like mm-hmm. I'm buying better made, more expensive shoes that are comfortable on my feet as opposed to 2 to 3 pairs of cheap shoes every year that run out. But there are some people that all they can get is those less expensive shoes mm-hmm. because that's the only money they have available. Yeah. I don't know. So I don't know the answer to that, but I know the tension of like
the back and forth between those things.
Yeah.
Because what is that? So at our house, it's important to buy American made if you have the option. If you have the option to buy American made, then you do. Mm-hmm. That supports jobs here in our country that employs, you know, people,
our neighbors.
Yeah, people here. But that comes with a hefty price tag.
Mm-hmm.
But you're paying people for their time. You're giving them a living wage. Like there's a lot of upside to buying
American.
Yes, there's
value and importance in that.
But what happens when you live in a country that you can't even afford to buy the things made in the country?
Yeah.
That's everything that's wrong.
Yeah. Like that's a bigger, well, we don't have time or we're not, we don't have the books for that yet. But
no.
Like,
no.
But, to, and I, we spoke with someone that we interviewed last year and we didn't do this on the recording because it felt too loaded. But we talked a little bit about, you know, the essential oils movement and how like people are all like, you know, what's best for your family. And don't you want chemical-free houses? And it's responsible to not bring those things into your home.
Mm-hmm.
And yes, that is. But there's also an extreme amount of privilege
mm-hmm.
weighted into that when you're saying, I get the choice to spend, you know, $30 on this bottle of chemical-free cleaner versus going to the dollar store
mm-hmm.
because that's all I can afford. And mm-hmm. Why do only the people with disposable income get the blessing of a chemical-free home? So, like, the idea that we, so much of the things that we take as rites of passage or as necessary things in America are still, if we strip them down, filled with money and privilege and
mm-hmm.
the choices that we are making are on the backs of people that do not have this choice, that do not have the ability to choose what we're choosing. And I think that's kind of where the whole consumerism, minimalism struggle.
It's it just kind of eats itself and you're just like, this is a horrible idea and this is a great idea.
Yeah.
And it really just depends on the day and who and what you were exposed to.
Yeah. And so where does that, like I'm 37. I have no idea what the right answer is. How do I even begin to talk about that with my kids or raise responsible children that understand the inherent privilege they have of being a middle-class white person in America.
Yeah. Well, we're going to try really hard to answer some of those questions and give you guys some suggestions on the next half of Not Terrible.
Hey, welcome back. We are returning for the second half of our conversation on consumerism and how to be wise with our finances. When we left off, Jess had started reading through a list about ways to be more conscious consumers. And then I kind of went off track with a little tangent that gave myself a headache on privilege and money and resources, and just I wasn't prepared for it. So we're coming back to the list and talking more about ways that we can be more intentional about how we spend our money and what we fill our homes with.
Yeah, so we the next one would be donate the stuff you don't use, which we've touched on that. We do that a lot.
Mm-hmm.
The next one is shop your own house. You'd be surprised at the things that you may have tucked away or that are in the basement or in storage somewhere, a closet. Well, not if you're Mary, because Mary just has empty closets. Or the attic. Or just like taking stuff from your bedroom and using it in your living room. Just rearranging the things you have as opposed to buying new things.
I did that. So in last fall, we got new carpet in a couple rooms in our house. And so I moved everything out of the family room and my office. And a lot of it went to the garage, but a lot of it just went to the living room and other areas of our house. Once I moved all the stuff out and kind of found what I thought were temporary homes for new things, I sat with it for a few days and I was like, I like that stuff here in this room instead. So one of my great joys is rearranging my house and just switching up things that I thought were only good for one room and putting them in a different room. And I didn't have to spend a penny. That was just like seeing my own possessions with different eyes.
Yeah. I think I'll do that. And I know that there's stuff even in our office right now that when we switch things around, probably in the next 6 months or so, not a big switch, but you know, that I'll probably move stuff back home and then move new stuff here.
Mm-hmm.
Steal ideas from organizational masters, such as hotels or shopkeepers. Usually shopkeepers and hotels, like, they know how to organize, they know how to make things look clean and streamlined, and there is no extra stuff. It's literally just what you need.
Very efficient with their design.
Yeah, so use that. It says, use a novel, affordable approach to storage. So, ditch the plastic is what they're saying.
Really?
Yeah, they say ditch the plastic. They say go for wood, glass, or ceramics. That way you're saving the planet, and it won't be
ugly. What storage are we talking about?
Any kind of storage. Like, when we were just talking about our Rubbermaids, we were talking about even cups. They just say ditch plastic altogether. Do you not think that applies to this?
I don't know how I feel about that.
Oh, you like plastic?
Well, I mean, I don't I'm not like... Not in the fan club, but I'm also not...
not opposed to it?
Yeah.
Yeah. I think they're probably talking more in terms of aesthetics.
Okay.
I'm guessing is what they mean. So this is more of the decorative side of it. But they're trying to loop it into some save the planet type stuff.
All right. I'm tracking with you now.
Okay. Know what you already have. So do an inventory. Go through. See what you have. Do you honestly need something? How many of what do you have?
I think that was because before the break you introduced this and said this philosophy, the Amish or the Quakers, whoever it is, their motto is that it needs to be visible.
Mm-hmm.
And I can't tell you how many times I've gone shopping, either grocery shopping or clothes shopping, and bought something and then realized when I got home that I already had it,
mm-hmm.
the exact same thing or something very similar. And if I have less things, I'm more aware of what I have.
Yeah. 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 And I've done that same thing. I just found a box of clothes when we were getting Christmas ornaments down, a box of clothes where I literally have, there's three pieces in there that I already have.
Oh.
And I'm not sure which are the originals, the ones I have now or the ones that have been in that box.
On the other side of that, so I do this a lot when I grocery shop too. And since I've started ordering my groceries online, it's a way that I can sit in my kitchen and order my groceries and also run to my cabinet and see what I have. Because
Ooh.
Before I did, you know, when I walk into the store and buy things. Mm-hmm. That's how I ended up with 4 bottles of sesame oil because I just kept buying things. And
what do you make it with all the sesame oil?
Not that much.
Stir fry?
I just like have one recipe and I would go buy new ingredients as opposed to look in my cabinets for them. So just being, just being aware of what I have in my cabinets would help with less stuff in my cart.
That is something that's really, at one point I think we had like 10 bottles of Worcestershire sauce and I was like, oh my gosh.
Yeah. We do that. Or like, hey, how many water bottles does this family need? Not 17.
Yeah. Establish habits and routines that simplify your life. I think that that's important on multiple levels. Even like, Mary, you talk about you wake up in the morning and you read the Bible every morning.
Mm-hmm.
I think that sets an intention for the day. I know, too, that even in the small daily rituals that I've added to my life, that it I've been on social media a lot less, and then I don't see the pop-up ads,
mm-hmm.
and I don't buy things that I don't need, like the new tattoo brow brush that I really, 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 really want, but I know that I really, really, really don't need, because right now I have 3 different kinds of brow brushes,
mm-hmm.
so
yeah,
not doing it.
Right, and nothing makes my stuff seem crappier than seeing someone else's stuff. So if I could keep my eyes off everyone else and, you know, stay in my lane, I do have enough. Yeah. I have enough.
Yeah, it's recently it's been what can I do next to keep my mind occupied?
Mm-hmm.
And I've noticed that the things that I do the most, I'm doing a lot less of, and they're mostly unhealthy things anyway, so it works out.
Yeah.
Also, the people from Amazon keep calling me and saying, are you okay?
They miss you.
They do. And the biggest thing is just to relax. I know that sounds crazy, but we all get overwhelmed and anxious. But this is literally their last suggestion, is to just relax and make yourself at home. And so that it's not uninviting to you or your guests. You just live there. That's where you live.
Mm-hmm.
Be comfortable, but you don't have to. This says your guest, but for me, I know a lot of times I decorate or I buy things or food or things like that because I'm like, well, somebody might stop by or somebody might need this or somebody might, you know. And I really have to stop living that life. I do mm-hmm. a lot of things based in that. And instead of like, I don't like to have meat in the house. I just don't.
Really?
Yeah. I just don't like to have meat in the house.
Okay.
And I don't, but I do because a lot of people do like to have meat in the house. But when we eat out, we usually, we'll probably have meat. And mm-hmm. that's when we can have meat, and that's fine. But I don't know. It's just weird.
Hmm.
Things like that that I just don't like to do.
That cozy minimalist book talked about making sure our possessions serve us as opposed to
mm-hmm.
us serving our possessions. So like,
what if you're serving people with your possessions?
You're not allowed to do that.
Oh.
The more things I take out of my living space, where she says like quiet the room
mm-hmm.
to figure out what you need versus what doesn't need to be there, I spend less time cleaning because I don't have as much stuff to manage all the time.
Mm-hmm.
And then I get to do more things that I find important, like people and relationships, as opposed to managing my stuff. So you get to, I'm not sure if meat is the logical jump for that, but but like you don't, you are doing things to serve mm-hmm. possessions. I don't know.
Well, yeah, here's one. I would keep really fancy alcohol that I didn't even necessarily like in my house because what if somebody stops by?
Mm-hmm.
Oh my gosh, you have that bottle of bourbon? I do. Wow. Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. Did it cost $125? Yeah, it did. Yeah, it did. Yeah. And then I would have this fancy crystal set that I didn't even really like and I didn't understand it, but you know, it was vintage and it kind of looked cool and it would mm-hmm. be a good talking piece. And it's just like, I have these conversations in my head with friends that I don't even have.
trying to impress people that are kind of assholes anyway.
Yeah, or they don't even exist because no one comes over to my house to drink $125 bourbon.
I wouldn't know. I wouldn't know. I wouldn't know if you got that at Aldi or at the
I know, but
vintage
that's just,
liquor store. Yeah.
This is weird. These are the things that, yeah, that I do to make myself feel better and to hope that people will like me.
Mm-hmm.
Is all, it's through a lot of through money. It's mm-hmm. a lot through money.
Yeah. And appearance.
Yes.
And that's, I think, kind of bringing us full circle of just what are we doing with our possessions? Are we serving others or are we trying to impress others or are we living through our possessions? Are we giving them more value than they need? Like, how does this all fit into a healthy view of ourselves and our money and our world? Like, that's, man, I feel like we started the last episode with this and we didn't really, there's, I don't know if there's a real answer. It's just a consciousness of being more aware, I guess.
Mm-hmm. And I just, like we say so often, it's not what we say to our children or what we ask them to do. It's what they watch us do and what they watch us say. So if that's what we want them to learn, then we have to live it.
Yeah. I hope my kids are learning that we don't have to fill our house with stuff, but that travel and adventure is really important. Like, yeah, that we would rather have a week exploring than the newest and greatest shoes all the time. But I don't know if that's serving others well. Mm-hmm. So maybe that's another, like, way we need to, I don't know.
I hope that my kids look around our house and each thing they see gives them a happy memory. That there's not a ton of things, but the things that are there, they know have purpose and have a story.
You want them to KonMari all their stuff.
What's that mean?
You know, the life-changing magic of tidying up.
Oh, yeah.
The KonMari method where you have to hold each thing.
Okay,
and
I take
bring
that back
because
that makes me nuts.
And if it doesn't, you need to get rid of it.
Okay, then I take that back. I just photos and little keepsakes of adventures and things. Like,
okay.
I hope that that's what our house is full of and that's what they come in.
So the things trigger memories, not like the memory is in the thing.
Yeah, the memory is not in the thing. It triggers memories. Yeah, I agree with that. I'll go with that.
Okay.
All right. Well, if you have any, I don't know, suggestions or
comments,
thoughts and comments about living a minimalist lifestyle or semi-minimalist, I think is more Mary and I speed or what we're working towards.
Conscious consumerism.
Yeah. Just being aware. Please, as always, email us at
notterriblepodcast@gmail.com. Or you can go to our website. Mm-hmm. notterriblepodcast.com, and there's a contact form on there.
Yes,
as well.
There you can listen to old shows, and if you are a subscriber, you can listen to the two bonus episodes that are out now.
Ooh, and one of the things we make fun of ourselves often about is, like, when we come to an episode, we've got stacks of books. We keep a running book list on the website, so if you have heard or slightly remember and can't remember the full name of a book that we have talked about, you can go to our website, notterriblepodcast.com, and find a book list of any book we've referenced in the whole, I don't know, the whole what?
The whole
podcast world.
The whole podcast
series.
Life, career of Not Terrible.
Adventure.
There you go. All right, and so I'm going to close with my Not Terrible, and my Not Terrible is the book that we referenced, and it's The Remodelista, The Organized Home. I've actually read this twice, and I'm going to flip through it again as I continue to tidy up my home. It is by Julie Carson and Margot Gurulnik.
Sounds good.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, I'm going to copy off you. I'm glad you did that because I'm going to say My Not Terrible is The Cozy Minimalist Home, More Style, Less Stuff by my Quinlan Smith. She's the Nester on Instagram. And her philosophy on cozy without a bunch of crap, that's my spin on it, not hers, is what we're kind of trying to do at our house.
We might have to post pictures of these so that everybody can see them. They both are very, I don't know. I'm a sucker for a good cover.
Uh-huh.
And these are good. They're like these. All right. Well, we'll see you guys next time.
All right. See ya.
You've been listening to Not Terrible with Jess Hooker and Mary Graham. Connect with us on Instagram, Facebook, or Twitter at Not Terrible Podcast. Visit us at notterriblepodcast.com for show notes and additional content. You can sign up for our newsletter for bonus episodes and podcast extras. Make sure you subscribe to the podcast on iTunes, Stitcher, or your favorite podcast provider.
When you subscribe, leave us a review. We'd love to share it on the podcast, like this one from Melinda PEI, who writes, "Best podcast ever. These ladies share in-depth knowledge and insight into tough topics and help us understand them. I love them."
Not Terrible is recorded in conjunction with the Off the Air podcast. Recorded in the Front Room Studios, this has been a Waco production.